Hello and welcome to another edition of Open All Eyes, the QPR podcast. Now, I'm very, very sorry that we didn't do one last week, but there was a traumatic experience in the Finney household. The dog had his balls cut off, and basically he caused havoc for the rest of the family. And yes, so we couldn't do a pod because poor little man had his nuts removed. And he's starting, for anyone interested, he's getting better. He's getting there. And he kept looking at me saying, "You should understand this better than anyone, Father." He's not happy. So, yes, I've got one very unhappy dog. But three QPR fans, is it right to say happy or sad? We'll find out in the due course of this podcast. Regular Simon Hall, how are you, Simon?
Very well, mate. How are you keeping all right?
Not too bad. Better than Hugo?
Just about, yeah. Haven't had my balls off yet.
Hey, talking of which, welcome to the podcast, George. Whose voice is
I don't know what you mean by talking.
Yeah, I was about to say, where are you going with that?
No, because I knew George when he was very young, and he's got a deep voice now, which means they've dropped. How are you, George? You all right?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on, as usual.
Yeah, more than welcome. Clive Whittingham is with us. Now, Clive, at the moment, has got his head in his hands, wishing he was playing football somewhere in dark, in anywhere, actually, I think, by looks of it. You all right, Clive?
Oh, George, my God. I was just ticking off gratuitous story about a household pet on my podcast bingo form, and I'll let you know when I've got a line across.
I'm not a line across. I've heard that a few times at football, I can tell you. Right. Tonight's theme, people, is where are we going, where we are, and the last couple of games. I'm going to start with Simon, because Simon has been up all night, and he might not last the duration of the podcast. Simon.
Right, let's start off with Sunderland. I'm going to count that as quite a missed opportunity. There was, I think, lots of people said that, yeah, you can always take a point away from home, but I don't think people appreciated up there how bad Sunderland were. That first 10, 15 minutes, they didn't look like a professional football team at that stage. And to be honest, we could have had two or three in the first 15 minutes. But then there was a big lull of nothingness for about 60, 65 before Armstrong had a couple of near post shots. And then, yeah, that great cutback, which, let's be honest, Willock really should be scoring from. So, I think the concern for me at the moment is we've done a fantastic job to get where we are. If anyone had said we'd be out the bottom three at this stage a few months ago, I think we'd all be laughing at you. I think where my concern is at the moment is we've had a couple of really good opportunities with West Brom, Sunderland. They're the sort of games which, whilst performances are fine and we're the better side, we do need to be winning. And let's be honest, if we'd have got that result against Sunderland, given the way all of the other results went our way, we'd be looking at 3 points clear with a better goal difference than most teams. And it'll mean that the pivotal four games which are coming up next are going to be absolutely crucial. There may not be as much pressure on them as there's going to be at the moment. And probably thinking about those next four games, I think you need to be realistically looking at about eight out of the next four, particularly given the fact you've got Hull, you've got Leeds, you've got Preston and Coventry, although, of course, with their wonderful win last week, they're in danger of a lot of fixture congestion, of course, being in danger of playing an FA Cup final one day and then the playoff final the next day. So that's going to be an interesting one with Coventry. Watch this space with whether they do actually have anything to play for. But, yeah, we were the better side up at Sunderland. We should have beaten them, but I think we're starting to tot up now a few little missed opportunities that really I think we need to take.
Thank you for that, Simon. And you didn't stop for breath once. Impressive.
Thanks.
I'm going to go to Clive, then I'm going to go to George, because frankly, that's why it's shown on my screen and that's about as much planning as I do. Clive.
I agree with Simon. It was. I'm always glass half empty anyway, aren't I? But I thought it was a big missed opportunity at Sunderland. I've either been to or watched every QPR game this season, and I've watched a lot of Championship besides. I don't think I've seen a starting 11 as weak as Sunderland's on paper, and I certainly haven't seen one play as badly as that. I thought Rotherham, both times we played them, were far better than Sunderland were on Saturday. They were atrocious, and you know, to look at what their manager said about them afterwards, they knew they were dreadful as well, and they gave you enough chances. The chair and the Anderson ones in the first 10 minutes, I think you've got to score one of those. And Willock at the end, the concern I've got is we're not scoring again. It's no goals against Middlesbrough, no goals against Sunderland. Sam Field's the only person that scored a goal in the last three games. It's kind of the theme of the season, really, just as I think we're getting it and we're going to be okay, we sort of row back a little bit. And we came through Rotherham and Leicester, and I was starting to think, oh, played so well against West Brom as well. I was like, oh, we'll be fine. And we've just taken that backward step again and we're not scoring. I think, look, we'll find out in May, won't we? If we stay up by a point, we can say, well, you know, good job we got that point at Sunderland rather than losing the last minute from one of their corners or whatever. You know, maybe it's the point that keeps you up, but I don't think you'll play a team as badly as bad as Sunderland were in these next eight games. I think we'd be very lucky to play a team as bad as that again, and we've got to take these chances when they come along, and because we're running out of time, aren't we? So yeah, look, there were positives, and the surprise hit of Jimmy Dunn at right back continues. Thought he was very good. Jake Clark-Salter, very good at centre-back. Steve Cook, on a sort of rare off day, made a few mistakes, and Jake covered for him, I thought. Isaac Hayden covered for a lot of people's mistakes in midfield. I thought he was great. And Anderson started well and then faded. So there were positives, but I just think the way Sunderland played, you really have to be winning that game. I think it's a huge missed opportunity.
It's interesting because I saw on social media a lot of people thinking that people who were saying that we should have won were being a bit negative because it was a good point, a well-earned point. What do you think, George?
I've spent too much of the last couple of seasons being a pessimist, so I'm going to try and be positive about this. First of all, I'll start with the defender. We didn't concede a shot on target. No matter how woeful Sunderland are, you always have to look at the defence and think, yeah, no shots on target. Good. The Willock chance reminded me heavily of Cardiff away at the start of the season. Armstrong down the line, Powell pull it away. Willock didn't. He should be scoring that personally. And I completely agree with what you said. Sunderland couldn't string a pass together. Like, you could class it as a missed opportunity. But I think if you look back on it and take all our recent results away from it, a 0-0 draw away at Sunderland isn't a bad thing, like, in my opinion. And you have Middlesbrough before that, a 2-0 loss at home. Kind of a reality check for us, I think, because we were going through that stage where we absolutely outplayed West Brom, who battered Huddersfield 4-1 the other week. And then almost back down to earth with the Middlesbrough one. But yeah, as I agree with Clive, with Hayden in the Sunderland game, some great tackles. Like, he's really impressed me since he's come in. And I think Armstrong coming on once again, such an impact, didn't he? That pace that he has is incredible. And I don't disagree with starting Dykes. Like, I get what he's trying to do. He's trying to do something similar to Bristol City. And I'm in most cases, I'm very happy with going into half-time away from home 0-0. Like, I don't see a problem with it. And I exactly see what he was trying to do. Bristol City and Leicester, we didn't exactly go out and press them, did we? So not sat back, but absorbed some of the pressure and then scored just on the brink of half-time. You could say that's a bit of luck, but I think tactical genius. But no, I think Sunderland, I'm thinking more a good point than two. Obviously, 2 points drop, but still a good point away up at Sunderland. So,
see, I will tell you my thoughts. Not that anyone cares or is interested, but I'll tell you them anyway. I think it's interesting about Dykes and Willock. It's so difficult, and you just Willock. I keep saying it. I don't understand why he just doesn't look at what Marty's done with Dunn and Anderson and see what we're building and maybe stay for another year and then get the move that he really wants. Because all he's going to do now is join a similar club to us on similar money. Maybe there's a big bid coming in. I don't know. But that chance, yeah. I mean, my mum could have scored it and she couldn't play football. So that was a downside. But, you know, Armstrong, Smith, done. Oh, look at me going all Irish again. Pick surprised me a little bit, but I think he's had too many games, Clive. And I think the games caught up with him, which is a shame just before the international break. And that's maybe why he wasn't really himself. But Clark Salter's turned into an absolute class defender. Nice playing again on a regular basis. You can see why we've got him. And I just think it is missed. I mean, I talked to Sunderland fans afterwards. My God, you think that we're a depressed lot. They wept. They're already planning for League One for the season after. They just have absolutely zero hope. They think a lot of them are talking about it, they've got injuries, but they think the players are just thrown in the towel and not turned up and just can't be asked to play for them anymore. And there's a really bad vibe about the club. But, you know, Middlesbrough probably got outplayed a little bit. We lost two. They just finished better than us. I am worried about the chances we're not taking, because goals will actually give you confidence, we know. And now Birmingham have brought in Riot again. Simon, should we be concerned about that, or is that just inevitable what we're having with Mowbray and all that malarkey?
I mean, I'm interested as to what's going to happen with Tony Mowbray, is that given that surely he must still be employed as Birmingham manager. So I'm not entirely sure how it works to have.
He's leaving and coming back at the start of 24-25. So Rowett's only on a short term contract to the end of the season.
Well, I think he's a lot sicker than what people are.
I suspect it might be a lot. Yeah, I think you're right. I suspect that might be a much longer term thing than what's been said. I mean, you think about Gary Rowett and people now getting worried, and it's hardly the second coming of Pep coming back to Birmingham, and he's hardly they're not great, Birmingham. That's the whole point. They've not been great for years and years and years, and it's another one of those games which is coming up where, look, if you can't get anything out of a Birmingham City, you're in terminally woeful form. You're almost at a stage of you deserve all you get. We know what Rowett's going to do. It's going to be rudimental, solid defence, 4-4-2, a couple of big blokes, lump it up to, I think Jukovic is injured, but someone like Scott Hogan will be up top. Look, we know it's going to be tough, but by rights, let's be honest, if we want to stay up, we should be beating a side like Birmingham who are terminally out of form. So, yeah, it's going to be a more difficult game than it would have been without Gary Rowett coming in. But there's certainly nothing there that we should be fearful about at all, as long as we do what we do. And that's been the story all the way. As long as we do what we need to do, we don't need to worry about what the other sides are doing at the bottom.
Yeah, Clive?
I'm more worried about the game than I was. I did sort of groan a little bit when I heard that Rowett was going in there. Because I know what that game is going to look like now. They're going to go 4-4-2 and big and physical. They're going to be difficult to play against. Tyler Roberts hasn't scored for them yet. I've been praying for the last few weeks that Tyler Roberts gets a goal against somebody. He's coming in without a goal for them. It all feels sort of horribly, horribly set up for a dreadful day. I am disappointed that Rowett's gone in there at that point. On the positive side, my Watford mate at work read my Sunderland match report when I said that Sunderland must be the worst team in the Championship at the moment. And he said, I'd be amazed if they were worse than Birmingham. He said they were hilariously bad against Watford at the weekend. So hopefully... You know, Birmingham are on to what? This is manager 5 or 6 of the season, if you include caretakers. Absolute chaos all over the show. So, you know, hopefully. But our home form's not good, is it? And it comes back to goals. The thing that worries me most about us is the goals. Like, I started the season saying there aren't any goals in this QPR team. And here we are, I think only the bottom two and Stoke have scored fewer. And we've stopped scoring again at just the wrong time. I think we've only scored more than two in a game once, Stoke at home. Mm-hmm. So you need to put these games away. And I'm not sure we've got the goals in us. I thought Dykes on Saturday was pretty abject, if I'm honest. He's on another run now of 10 games without a goal. I think he's got 5 in 41 for us this year. One of those a penalty. 8 he scored last year in 40 games. 2 of those a penalty. And I wouldn't mind so much if he was charging around and smashing people up and roughing them up, you know, like he did at Preston away. I don't mind if he doesn't score, if he plays like that. But when he plays like he does on Saturday, I'm just looking at it thinking, what is the point of you? What is this? And then Armstrong comes on and plays like he does. Sifuentes doesn't seem to trust Armstrong very much. I know he gets tired and he makes silly decisions and he goes down with cramp a lot. I just think we look so much more threatening with Armstrong on, and I'd like to see him a lot more. I just think if I'm a championship centre back, you know, we'll go in against Frey, who works hard, but it's just big physical lump, and you go in against Dykes and sometimes he doesn't even work that hard. You don't want Armstrong, do you? He's so quick and powerful and whatever. So I'd like to see a little bit more of Armstrong, I think, just to try and I don't think draws are going to do it. We've got to go out in these games against Birmingham and score goals and try and win these games. It's the goals that worry me the most. He's basically solved every other problem, Sifuentes. I mean, I remember, you know, when we used to say we have to play with a back three, we have to have a defensive midfielder in front because our centre-backs are so terrible. You know, as soon as can you imagine us saying we're going to be keeping clean sheets and progressing up the league, playing a back four, and Jake Clark-Salter and Steve Cook are going to be statistically the third best centre-back pairing in the league, and you don't need a defensive midfielder in front of them, it's fine. Like, we're going to play a back four and we're going to do this, and Jimmy Dunn's going to be right back. People would have said you're insane. So Sifuentes has solved every problem with us, but he's still working with a strike force of Lyndon Dykes, Michy Frey and Sinclair Armstrong. And we need goals to get us out of this. And the thing that keeps worrying me is I don't think we've got them. That's the thing that just niggles me.
What do you personally put the poor record of Dykes down to? Because we know he's not a goal scorer, but as you say, then you've got to be a goal creator, which he's not really doing either. I mean, he's just drifting in and out of games, isn't he, Clive? It's bizarre.
Yeah, he's not very good.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah, but no, it's pretty sad. If he was any good, he wouldn't play for us, would he? Like, he wouldn't have been available he wouldn't have been available on our budget. I would like him to make more of the physical attributes he's got. Just smash people up. The thing that frustrated me on Saturday is we put a cross in the box. Anderson put a cross in the box after about 23, 24 minutes. Mm-hmm. And their centre-back, who isn't even a centre-back, he's a left-back, stood at the near post and side-footed out for a throw-in. Anderson put that same cross in against Norwich, and Frey, who, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of him, but I think is a pretty rudimentary centre-forward at best and hasn't got a lot of mobility and is clearly short of fitness. Frey moved across the centre-back to the near post and side-footed in, and we got a point against Norwich. Anderson puts the same ball in against Sunderland, and the centre-back's able to side-foot it out unchallenged because Dykes hasn't made the move because he doesn't understand where he's meant to be and where he's meant to run. He obviously is not a football fan. He doesn't watch football. We know that about him. You know, there was a TikTok video went viral of him the other week where people were saying, which Ronaldo did you prefer? And he didn't actually know there was more than one Ronaldo. So he doesn't have a football sort of upbringing or background. He was a rugby league player in his teens. He doesn't watch or like football, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem. There's this big debate this week about Ben White, isn't there, who's basically the best right back in the Premier League. But you can just see in him that he doesn't know where to go and where to stand and where to be, whereas someone even as basic as Frey does know that if Anderson is shaping up over here to make this cross, you run across the man at the near post because that's what the centre-forward is meant to do. And Dykes just sort of stands there going, oh. So, yeah, he's not my favourite at the moment, Dykes, but usually when I tee off on him, he scores. So, fingers crossed.
Yeah, probably for Scotland. George?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think it shows how far we have come, because at the start of the season, I was coming on here and praising Dykes' work rate and everything, and how he'd like try and hold up the play and try build it together under the awful Wainsworth style of football. But I think a lot that, as you said about the goals, has to come down to the start of the season recruitment. We went into the season with Sinclair Armstrong and Lyndon Dykes as our two strikers. And I know I've said it so many times, but Ainsworth saying that both of them were going to get double figures this year was delusional, in my opinion. And when someone asked him, oh, what strikers has we got? He's listed out Armstrong, Dykes, Charlie Kelman, who's not getting a game for Wigan, and Ryan Colley, who's 18 years old. And we learned from Armstrong not to put all the pressure on someone. So I think that's a lot to do with the goals. I think since Marty's come in, he said that he's got the ethos of once we score, go score another. And we haven't really seen that, but I haven't liked it where we saw it at Sheffield Wednesday when we went a bit defensive and then we conceded two goals and they won the game. So I think certainly the fact that we're talking about these minute details now of just scoring goals, obviously it's the main part of football, but it's so good to see how assured our back line is. As I said, Jimmy Dunn at right back, who would have thought it? Honestly, I was coming on here, what, three pods ago, slaughtering him, saying how poor he was against Millwall and everything. Because he was playing at centre back with Osman Kakai at right back, who's completely gone. God knows where he's gone. I know he played today in the 4-0 win against Arsenal's 11, but but Dunn at right back, been really good. You could say that. In modern day football, do some centre back suit playing right back? Because you see it with Ben White, as you said, Clive. Good right back in the Premier League, brought up as a centre back. But back onto the Dykes point, I've talked to him a good few times, and I've had like private chats about his like upbringing and everything. And you're completely right. He has no interest in football. Lovely guy, but he just doesn't know football. And I saw that TikTok as well. I think it was Fernando Torres as the best footballer or something. He's never heard of Ruud Gullit in the TikTok, which is just very, very confusing. But I think the fact that we're having these conversations, yes, you need to put the ball in the back of the net, but I think it shows how far we've come under Cifuentes from the start of the season.
Trouble is, he's another player that... When's this contract up, Clive? It's not. It's next season after this, isn't it?
We renewed it in the summer, so it's like he's. I think he's one of the contracts we are allowed to know about. So yeah, for the duration. Although I suspect, should we stay up and Cifuentes is here next year, I think he might be getting the Osman Kaká shape card in the summer, because this manager clearly. Once he's decided you're not for you, I don't think things like contracts really, really matter. That's the end of you.
He might have a very good Euros and get himself removed to Scotland, where he's very popular.
Yes, I mean, we could just do with him accidentally scoring a couple of goals in the Euros and as tricking someone. On a more positive note, to follow up on what George said, I'm so pleased for Jimmy Dunn, because like he's played really poorly for the last year, but it's not like some of the others that we've had in that period who've played poorly and didn't seem to really give much of a toss about it. Like Jimmy Dunn, from all the interviews and the interactions and everything you said, Jimmy Dunn's a really genuine guy, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's really played on his mind how he was playing. It's really affected him. He's had a dreadful year. And like I've said, I've written some terrible things about him because he was playing terribly. Like Millwall away, I was just like, Jesus, this guy. So for him to come back as strongly as he has out of position, I am interested to see whether it continues post-international break. Now everybody's opposition scout reports have caught up on the fact that we're playing Jimmy Dunn right back, because there was a little period in August when we played Paul Smith at right back and it went really well for a few games, but that was just because the opposition scout reports on us hadn't had us down as playing one way. And then we turned up with Paul Smith at right back and caught a couple of teams cold. And as soon as they realised Paul Smith was playing right back, they absolutely hammered us, and that was the end of that. So post-international break, opposition scout reports will have caught up on the fact we're playing Jimmy Dunn right back, and let's see what happens after that. But last four games, he's been brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, and I'm so pleased to see him and see him getting praise on socials, because he is one of the players that is quite active on socials, and he's had dogs abuse on there. So really, really chuffed for him to see him coming back strong, playing well, enjoying football. Really pleased.
I like him. I mean, when he's been on the pods a few times, he's always been saying, but he's always, I suppose, in contrast to what people say. I didn't say those things about Dyke, so I don't know. But he lives and breathes the game, and you can tell he knows how lucky he is to be playing it. I don't think he's one of them that takes it for granted. But it's interesting what you say about him playing right back, because what I think he's doing, he's reading the game really well. And we all know that his pace isn't going to be like Wayne Faraday, for God's sake. There's one for the younger ones. But he's reading the game. He's doing the simple things, because getting the ball out as a centre-half and playing with it wasn't his thing. And I think he's reinvented himself. And I think that says a lot about Marte. It's just a shame he couldn't convince Dykes that he is Ronaldo. That might help.
The bit that really surprises me is, I know, like, we all thought at centre-back, him playing the ball is not his strength. He is going forward with the ball brilliant effect. That field header that was cleared off the line against West Brom was from a Jimmy Dunn cross with his left foot. I can't believe how effective he is just piling forwards. I mean, I don't know if some of it is like dog in a playground syndrome. It's just, you know, the bit of chaos coming to, and we don't know how to deal with it. But he's looked really good for the last four games. I'm so pleased about that.
So my next question, because this is how the podcast works. People keep telling me this is how podcasts work. I have no idea. I'm just winging it. You'd never guess, Simon, would you? We hold it together so well. What do we change for Birmingham? What do we do? What's the best thing that we can hope for as our team? Should we? Because the international break, I was surprised he was resting some players, because I thought, well, the international break gives you a couple of weeks off anyway, but hey-ho.
It's a really tough one, to be honest. I still think you stick with the four, you stick with the two. Anderson, hopefully with another couple of weeks more training, can actually last longer than about 50, 60 minutes, because at the time he does play in full strength, you can tell he's about a level or two above. He's a level or two above anyone else. I think it's difficult, to be honest. I suspect what he'll do is he'll go 4-2-3-1 again. He'll go with Frey up top at home, because let's be honest, he works harder than Dykes. And then I think get something where Armstrong can come on for 30-40 minutes. And I think I do see the point now that would Armstrong have been as effective in that first bit against Sunderland, as opposed to when it's 30-40 minutes to go, Sunderland making some vague attempt to try and get forward, and then he could sort of break behind. My suspicion will be we'll go with the four if we can. The two in midfield is a tough one. Personally, I'd probably go with Field and Hayden, and that's not to downsize anything Colback's done recently. He'll start Willock. Because no matter what we think of Willock, there is always the potential he'll do somehow. I suspect it'll be 4-2-3-1, and it'll be similar to what we tried to do against West Brom.
Fair enough. George, same question.
I completely agree. I don't see why you would change up the 4-2-3-1. Obviously, a couple of games where we haven't won, but it's been working. So I agree. Obviously, you've got Begovic in goal. I think I've been saying the last couple of days, oh, maybe we'll drop down. Maybe I don't see why you would. So I think you'll stick with the same back four, Clark, Salter and Cook, as Clive said, third best ranked centre-back pairing. Brilliant pair. And I spoke to Steve Cook, and what a genuine guy as well. Mm. Like, honestly, lovely guy. And then Clark Salter, I've said this before, one thing Mick Beale got right was that on form and not injured, he is one of the best left-footed centre-backs, if not all centre-back in the division, in my opinion, because he's looked so assured since he's had his like injury run. And then obviously Powell at left back, who I think people have been saying he's been doing all right recently. I think at points he gets a bit overrun, he gets a bit out of position, but I agree with Simon with the two in defensive midfield. I think Field and Hayden, I think if you go Field and Colback, one of them's going to get a yellow card, aren't they? So, and I've said it before, with both your midfielders on a yellow, it allows them to run through with so much ease because you don't want to risk it. And I think he'll be the same three behind. I think Chair, Willock, Anderson. Anderson, from what I've seen of him, seems like some player. Next season, wow. He just seems to like glide on the ball. And I can see his reading of the play is incredible. And for once, our corners at the moment, may I just say, are actually looking all right. Like, they're not just hitting the front man when Anderson's taking it, and we're actually looking kind of threatening. I'm getting off my seat a little bit more for a corner rather than it being a back pass. And you've got Chair and Willock as usual. Chair been taken off the last couple of games, but I think he's still our creative aspect. I think no matter whether he's having a good game or not, in my opinion, I wouldn't take him off, because I think, yes, Willock has them moments, but Chair just has that little bit of quality and special shot from outside the box or something like that in him. And I agree with Simon once again with Frey up front. I think from the games that we saw, I think West Brom, did he start up front? Chased absolutely everything. So impressed. And like, I know he missed a penalty, but in my opinion, he was one of the man of the matches that game. If I wanted one person to score, and it was him, and he had the goal disallowed for God knows what reason. So, Frey's looking good. He scored another two today. I know it's a behind-closed-door game, but he's starting to look at another one. And you have to put it down to recruitment now as well, I think. Michael Frey, who would have heard of him? That's the thing. Went to Schalke in Bundesliga, didn't score any goals. But then before that, good record in the Belgian leagues. So, he's looked good. And I think you're right about Armstrong. I think from the start, he just looks a bit... He's trying to nail himself down as a striker, and I get that, and he's trying to not to chase everything. But because he's so young, I don't think he knows what to chase and not what to chase. And that's just going to take a bit of teaching, which I think Marty can definitely give him. So I think he'll be Frey up front, and yeah, that's my starting 11.
But to be fair to Armstrong, I think since Marty has come in, he has learned to back a lot to what he was doing under Ainsworth, which was basically just random people and you can see the frustration within him, which you're not really seeing now. I mean, there was a case on Saturday when, you know, you can see what Sunderland are doing to us, and they're doing things and winding us up, and he's not biting as he was before. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. It's a tricky one. I mean, I think we've got the bench just about right. At least we can use the bench, which we haven't been able to do all season. So it's getting there. I just worry, like Clive, about goals. I think that, you know, you need to be taking your chances because of Bridge comes. But, you know, and no doubt the club will make an anniversary shirt and T-shirt of us beating Arsenal behind closed doors 4-0. You know what they're like? Ledesma, arrest my case. So, you know, it all helps for confidence. It's all good. Now, there is also something, and I'm going to have to come to you, Clive, because you might be younger than me, but you're a wise old owl. Well, you certainly look like one. And... This rehash ground move, come on. I mean, is it just reporters looking for a story, or is it, as we always was, which is, it's just talking for the sake of talking? Because nothing ever seems to happen in Loftus Road one way or another, does it?
Wow, that's a curveball. Didn't know you were going to ask me that. First of all, it's in the Daily Mail. So, you know, take that, I would, with all the salt. I think so far, the new chief exec so far, you know, recruitment in January, big tick in his box. Yep, there, that players we brought in. We're talking about how far we've come. I was looking at some of the team selections and tactics, and losing 4-0 at home to Blackburn with Larkesh at right back and things like that. And then you look at the options we've got now. Hayden, if we're talking about team selection, I would just like Hayden. I don't think we should be rotating him out. I think it should be, if Hayden's fit to play, Hayden should play, and it should be a choice between sort of Colback, Field, and Hodge. Actually, has been saying today in his Irish press conference that he's more of a deep lying midfielder than an attacking one. So you could play Hayden and Hodge there, but it should be Hayden. So January recruitment, big tick in his box. I obviously don't like what he's doing about not revealing the contracts. And, you know, we'll see how this chief executive does. But I like that we're filling the stadium now. I like that the lower school end is QPR now. Chef Wednesday are booting off about how few tickets we've given them. And I hope we do exactly the same to Leeds, because, you know, these are important games for us. So he's getting stuff right, I think. Ticket offers and things like that, which we know Lee Hu's had his reasons for not doing, but it's nice to see Loftus Road full. I think from what we understand so far, he's more attuned or akin or keen on staying at Loftus Road and developing Loftus Road than looking elsewhere. I think that's probably because chances of us getting a ground elsewhere in West London in the next 10 years are next to zero. And really, until you're selling your stadium out and you've got a waiting list for season tickets, it's very difficult to make a case for a new stadium anyway. So he's at least taking the first step of let's fill Loftus Road, let's have lower school, and let's have, you know, sellouts and people looking for tickets. I think you've got to do things like that and build up your own ground before you start talking about new grounds and things like that. I just laugh at stories like that, and people, and also people getting het up about stories like the one in the Mail. Like, we're fifth bottom in the Championship. We could still be having league games with Stockport and Barrow and people. We could have Tuesday night in Barrow next year. Like, one thing at a time, guys. You know, Project Big Ben, my God. Like, it's just like, calm yourselves down, I guess. I think it's the sort of nonsense story that Mail Online likes to pick up and make out like it's a massive deal, when I don't think it is. You know, they're obviously pitching around for investment and people to get involved, and Richard Riley's got involved and things like that. We're fifth bottom of the Championship. Let's do one thing at a time.
Simon.
Yeah, totally agree with that. As I say, I think I totally agree. I mean, few of us were there when we spoke to Norrie. Not sure how much we're allowed to say, obviously. But it's...
wonder what you called special, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, it was... So, no, it was interesting. He was interesting to listen to. And, yeah, we seemed to have moved back. It was back in September in the fans' forum, wasn't it? They were mentioning about what we do with Loftus Road. I mean, the interesting thing is specifically what we do with it as opposed to anything else. I mean, we asked the question about whether you extend safe standing in the lower lofts or anything like that, and you potentially make that whole bit lower lofts. Do you end up trying to get the land from the school and potentially rebuilding in the school and making that a little bit bigger? I think it's interesting, though, that he's thinking of those ideas, because I think for me, I had the impression mainly of Norrie is more of a sort of technical football man as opposed to anything else. So what he's going to be like with the business element of it and dealing with the stadium will be quite interesting. But one of the things that's quite encouraging is that he does seem willing to talk to a wide variety of people to begin with. He's already started speaking to Hammersmith Council, where we know relationships between the club and the council over the last few years haven't been great, perhaps due to the actions of people at the club. So he certainly is trying to build bridges, but I think it's good to see that he's looking to see whatever we can to do with Loftus Road. And if there are things that we can do, I think obviously we'd all prefer to stay there.
Just before I go to George, can I just say something about the tickets and Sheffield Wednesday? It's laughable, isn't it? We give people more than we ever should for years and years and years and years. And for once, we're doing on others what they do to us, and bollocks to them. Make that school end full of QPR fans, even if it's tourists or day trippers, I don't care. Because why should we give the away team an advantage of having two tiers when we only really have to give them the top tier? So, yeah, bollocks to them. George?
No, I completely agree. Like, why would you give them the bottom tier when recently we've been selling out? Like, I just don't see why you would. If you go off the ticket sales, we're selling tickets ourselves, so why would you? And I'm not going to come out and say I'm a master of all this financial stuff, but I think the Loftus Road capacity isn't the problem. It's the fact that there's no money in the stadium, because you got a stadium that's working, what, 23 to 25 days a year? Because we haven't got no facilities there or nothing. We can't rent it out for any concerts or any. That's just an example. I know, was it the BBC used to use it as office space years ago? But since then, there's no money earning there. And you see these modern day stadiums, they have all sorts of things going on. And I think that's the sort of thing we need. And I think that's the sort of thing the owners would want. They'd want to expand, build some like complete leisure hub within West London. I don't see why the council wouldn't be up for that. Obviously, technology's evolved and like what you can do with a stadium. Like, can you dig down? Like, can you get the school grounds? Like, I don't know. I'm just creating suggestions here, but I think, as Clive said, I don't think we're going to get any area in West London. Obviously, we tried with Linford Christie. They're so determined not to let us have that. So, yeah, I think a new stadium, obviously, where we are in the league isn't a priority. But I think with our financial fair play and everything, getting a new stadium will help us a lot because it'll give us an income that isn't just ticket sales or all these other things. And I think that Nuri coming in, he's all these sponsorships and everything, that's good to see as well. A little bit more monetary income. But as I said, I'm not going to come out and say I'm some financial expert, but that's my opinion.
Well, I can't wait till they get the toilet sponsored. I think that'll be funny. But the thing I like about it is that we can do things with Loftus Road. I mean, there's bits of the ground that could be just joined up a bit better. Like, you could join up some parts of the Suffolk Road stand with a paddock for catering facilities, for instance. Just put a stowaway in and give better catering facilities, because it's an absolute nightmare at halftime. But, you know, they're little things. But I see no reason why. I mean, Brentford have got a new ground, but it's no bigger than ours, and the parking's just as shite. So you can't think it. Just think outside the box. Rebuild Loftus Road. But see, I think we farmed the catering out. We farmed this out. We farmed that out. So hopefully he'll bring it all in house, and then we'll improve things. But I listen. I'm old fashioned, and I'll probably be dead by the time we get down the M40 corridor, because that's where we'll end up. I think anyone who thinks we're going to stay in W12 or Hammersmith or that area is deluded. We'll be down the M40, which will suit some people and not others. But I love Loftus Road, and I want to stay there. So that's my humble opinion. But more importantly, I do like the fact that we are selling out games and we're having to use the school in to put our own fans in, because our fans come first, so did everyone else. Now, what else have we done? Oh, I suppose we could do ours end, I suppose. By the way, Clive, I have been noticing of late on your writing and that, you're getting a lot of good praise. So I want to bring you back down to earth.
Oh, God.
Actually, I can't. It's excellent.
You should see the anonymous emails I get, mate. It's not all sunshine and lollipops.
Probably the same people that email me. But being dyslexic, tick, is a godsend when you're getting abuse, because you can just spin the letters around. It's marvellous. But no, you're right, said, honest to God, mate, it's incredible, the dedication and the reports you do for QPR fans. You're up there with Dave Thomas now, and you're getting old as well, so I can say that. You're not a spring chicken anymore, Clive, you're getting on.
Where's this going? You don't normally say nice things. Why are you doing this? I'm very uncomfortable.
Well, no, because we've got you on the podcast and we haven't lost, so that's one sort of curveball we've done.
It basically was a defeat.
Yeah, some people could argue, some people would argue, but... So, listen, before we do the odds in, actually, I suppose we'll try and make it a nice breakdown of easy sentences for keep it quick. What's the games? I'm going to go to each of you, starting off with George. We've got the target to win to stay up. And what points do you think it's going to take? George.
Right. So, I think 10 points, I think, will get us to safety. And I think you've got to look at our next four games. You've got Birmingham at home, which I think is a... on like stereotypical six-pointer. I think we've got to win that one. Swansea away, obviously they're high after their win against Cardiff. That may be a difficult one, but selling, we sold, what, 700 away tickets in 24
brilliant.
Hours?
Brilliant. But brilliant pricing by Swansea, and a brilliant way of doing it, just getting on your season ticket. Absolutely superb.
We'll sell that out. We'll sell Swansea. I think we'll sell all the away games out apart from Hull now.
No, completely brilliant support. And if we're going off games that I feel we have to win, you've got to look at the obvious one of Sheffield Wednesday at home. I think that one must win. It'll be difficult, really difficult, but we'll sell out again. Crowd will be brilliant. And yeah, you want to win every game. I'm not going to come out and say, oh, you got to win this one over this one, because you can't say that. You've got to beat the teams around you. That's something QPR have struggled with in recent years. So I think Sheffield Wednesday at home and Birmingham at home stereotypically are the ones, but you've got to be looking to get as win in every game, obviously.
Live.
Because who would have thought we'd win at Leicester?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So
exactly.
The way things are going, you know, I think we'll have all on with Birmingham now. With this Rowett thing, it's made me nervous. I think we might get beat by Birmingham, which will feel like an absolute catastrophe if it happens. But then we could go up to Hull and win, just because that's how it is. We had a weird weekend where we won at Leicester, and then we looked at the results and everybody else had won. I just couldn't believe it. And then on Saturday, we were blowing that chance at Sunderland, and we came out and looked at our phone, and not only had nobody else won, but nobody else had even scored in the bottom eight.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a bit of a fool's mission to try and go through and pick out, obviously Chef Wednesday at home looks like an absolute must win. I go through stages with it. I think if we win, we've got eight games left now. If we win three of them, you'd think, oh, this is going to be tight, right? But if we win three games, that means that two out of Birmingham, Chef Wednesday and Huddersfield, two of those teams are going to have to win four.
Yes.
Now, Huddersfield couldn't even beat Rotherham. So if we can put, we might lose to Birmingham, draw at Swansea, beat Chef Wednesday, beat Plymouth, and then win at Coventry on the last day with Coventry all over the place. That would, that seems like a dreadful set of results, but it would mean that two of Birmingham, Chef Wednesday and Huddersfield would have to win four games to get above us. So when you start talking about must-win games and whatever, I don't know. I go backwards and forwards with it. I say things like that and it reassures me that we'll be okay. And then I look at the lack of goals in us and I think, oh, God. If we could just beat Birmingham on Friday, it would just give us that four-point cushion. And then, as we showed last year, once you've got that cushion, it only needs just one or two wins and you're fine. So
I see, Clive, you're traumatised by the devil and the angel on your shoulders, one saying one thing and one saying the other.
I'm traumatised because I think there's two types of relegation. In my time following QPR, we've been relegated, I think, five times.
Wow.
And a couple of those have been like a Rotherham relegation this year where you're just not good enough. Like, you're just absolutely nowhere near. You can't blame refereeing decisions or if we'd only done this in this game or whatever. It's just nonsense. Like, you're the worst team in the league. And we had that both times we got relegated out of the Premier League just recently. You couldn't say anything other than we were just absolutely, sure, just absolutely the worst team. Like, hands up. Maybe 2000, 2001, when we got relegated out of this league, was that as well. But I still remember moments in that season, like, we absolutely battered Grimsby at home in the same way that we just battered West Brom. And the Grimsby goalkeeper, Danny Coyne, had this worldy game against Peter Crouch. We made eight or nine saves and we ended up losing the game. And I just came out of that West Brom game where they'd punched balls off the line, they'd headed balls off the line, we'd missed penalties, thinking, is that Grimsby game? Because in other relegation seasons, you have these moments. And when we got relegated in 1996, we were a poor team, but there was enough in that team to stay up. And you look through that season, we went 2-0 up at home to Tottenham. We got a bad penalty given against us and we lost. There was the Cantona goal, obviously. Simon Barker put a penalty over at the bar against Middlesbrough. Kevin Gallen missed a penalty against Leeds. There were these moments and they started to stack up on you. And the thing that sort of worries me a bit about us is there's a lot of moments stacking up. Sam Field missed three chances over Christmas for 6 points. Rotherham away, Norwich away, Chef Wednesday away. 6 points left there just through one player missing chances he should have scored. Fraser missed penalty against West Brom. Willock's miss against Sunderland. The penalty we should have had in the last minute at Ipswich. The penalty we should have had at home to West Brom. There's all these moments stacking up. And what I'd like to see, just to reassure me, in one of these Easter fixtures is a big moment going for us. Like, a goal that should be disallowed, somebody punching a ball in and nobody notices, a dodgy penalty given our way, an offside, just a big moment, a last minute goal, a big moment going our way just to convince me that we might be okay. Everything we've seen under this manager tells me that we will be, but there's just so all these moments stacking up. Paul Smith missed a really good chance at Ipswich as well. It's just like, at the moment, there's loads of moments that you'll look back on at the end and just think, ah, if only that had gone the other way. And it makes me nervous, along with our attack.
No. Thank you, Mr. Cheerful. Simon.
I hope. So unfortunately, I'm not going to sort of lighten the mood, but I think for me, bizarrely, the team who I think I'm going to be wanting to win the next three or four games is going to be Norwich. Because if you have a look at those, if you have a look at those last four games, Coventry, Preston, Hull, if we have a situation where Norwich continue the great run of form they're on, it's pretty much knocking them three out, them potentially on the beach, and that potentially brings them into play as games that we could end up getting something out of. So that's going to be an interesting watch this space about them. I did say in the pod a couple of weeks back that I didn't think the number of points you're going to need to get to stay up is going to be as high as people think. And I think over the last few games, I think that's going to be quite clear now. I think you are going to be looking at, as George rightly says, I think you're going to need 50. And 50, I think, will be definite. And then potentially, you're right, we could be going to 48, 49. I know it's easy not to target, but I think everyone's said it already. Those next four games, get 8 points out of them. And then, look, you could potentially should get a win against Preston, something out of Hull. There's no reason for Hull. And really? As I say, let's wait for Coventry at the end of the season to see what stays there in. I mean, obviously, the one that I'm writing off a bit at the moment is going to be Leeds, which is going to be an unbelievable ball ache of a game regardless. So, but who knows, that could be the sort of game where we're not expected to win and we do something. I think, yeah, it's who knows, but my opinion, you're going to need 50. We're capable of getting 50, but it's who knows.
I'd personally would love to throw Leeds into the playoffs. That's just how my mind works.
Mate, your mind needs to work the other way. We don't need Leeds. We need Leeds to be up.
Yeah, no, that's sad.
As much as it pains me and whatever, we do not want Leeds coming down here. Because you know what will happen as well if you give them 1,800 tickets. 4,000 of those twats will turn up regardless. And that it will be moved to Friday for Sky. It will be an absolute circus and a zoo that night. We do not need Leeds coming down here, second last game of the season, needing a result. We need them to basically just plough their way through and win the thing before that.
I just don't like them, Clive. I never have.
But me, I hate them. I've got absolutely no time for Leeds, but I fear that I fear that game. If Leeds need a point or a win to seal promotion, I foresee a very long night in Shepherd's Bush and W12 on a Friday night with Sky. If Leeds need to, that game just looks like a ball ache every which way, on the pitch, off the pitch, in the stands. I've already had Leeds fans like tapping me up if I could get them spares and whatever, and it's just like, go away, leave me alone, please.
See, I think we've got problems, but Birmingham and Leeds, I think both are going to be pretty hard to cope with for everyone. It's going to be a ball ache and a half, the Birmingham game, because they seem to target Loftus Road as a fun, mad day out for the morons. And not all the fans, a lot of the fans are decent. A lot of the Birmingham fans I know are signed, but it seems to be a crazy day out when they come to Loftus Road for some reason. And Leeds definitely will cause havoc whenever it happens, whether they're going for promotion, whether they've won promotion, or they're just celebrating and rubbing our noses in it. Who knows? But they'll cause hassle. But there you go.
One team we haven't mentioned in all of this is Blackburn, who, like, if we could just get above Blackburn, like if we could win on Friday and get above Blackburn, I'd be a lot more confident, because I think they've won. I'm looking at it here. 2 out of 19 games, their remaining fixtures include Ipswich, Southampton, Leeds, Chef Wed, Coventry and Leicester. They've still got to go to Leicester and Leeds. Mm. And they've got 2 out of 18 games. Blackburn are right in this. So, you know, well, we're being negative and I'm being negative about, I'm worried about Gary Rowett going in at Birmingham and them coming out of the equation. Blackburn are right in the equation. Huddersfield as well. I watched Huddersfield fold against West Brom. They couldn't even beat Rotherham. Rotherham had lost their two previous games 5-0. You know, Huddersfield have got Cobb at home this weekend. And then they play like Stoke away. That's a huge game, but good for us because somebody's dropping points somewhere, right? Like, they can't both win that. They've still got to go to Preston. They go to Ipswich on the last day of the season. Their second last game is at home to Birmingham.
So, you know, as much as there are negatives around and whatever, you look at some of these other teams, they're going to be shitting themselves as well.
Well, I'm kind of hope. I mean, I kind of thought Wednesday would get out of it some weeks ago. I'm not so sure now because they're not picking up the points I thought they would. But yeah, Blackburn definitely. I mean, that is a club that is, as much as we moan about how badly QPR run, Blackburn will always give you a good run for your money sometimes. That is an absolute basket case for a football club. And Huddersfield, I think, are gone with Rotherham. I think that I don't think they've got enough in them to stay up. So yeah, you're right. But I kind of just, maybe I'm just being old and stupid. No, don't argue with me. I am. And I just think, get this season out of the way. Next season is going to be exciting. That's my theory, my hope, my dream. My just get, I think that every season when it's not gone the way you want, just get this one out of the way. Next season will be better. Yeah, it doesn't normally work. No, I am excited about Cervantes. I love what he's doing. I love the fact that he's improving players. You can see the recruitment is improved massively. And I think next season, once he gets his own players in, we'll see a big difference in the kind of players that are coming in. But I suppose I should move it on to the RSN before everyone decides to switch off and their commute comes to an end as they draw into Waterloo or whatever station they're coming into. So, George, RSN.
Well, my RSN is today's World Down Syndrome Day, actually, and it leads me on to the Tiger Cubs, in my opinion. Well, not in my opinion, it does. I've done a lot of work for them. I've done charity runs. I've gone on the Tiger Feet Walks. I'm doing it again this year. Such a brilliant setup, honestly. The work that some of these people, Justin, Fiona, all these people behind the scenes do for these kids is incredible. And honestly, I would walk the Tiger Feet 10 times in a row. I'd run it if I had to. Just to
Yeah, take the oldies,
keep raising money. And honestly, it's such a great setup. And no matter how bad results are on the pitch or where we are in the league, it's such a special club. And for me, I was so young when I started doing all this fundraising and everything. And it's just so nice to see. No matter what results are on the pitch, behind the scenes never change with that sort of thing. And the work some of these people do is incredible. And the Tiger Cubs, what a setup.
I'm really pleased you said that, George, because you're going to be on podcast duty with me that day, and we're going to be interviewing people who are walking and people involved in it. So well done. You've just volunteered yourself. I really appreciate that.
Cheers,
Bring your
bro.
phone. You're right, though. I mean, I've done it numerous times and it never stops to amaze me. It's just good. Listen, I could come up with all these things and saying, but the kids are brilliant. The parents are brilliant. The whole thing is brilliant, and it gives hope. Dear God, there's enough things in the world that are killing us at the moment, but hope is very short, and we've got it in abundance for the Tiger Clubs. And Fiona and Justin are just amazing human beings, anyway. So yes, we will be interviewing people, George, that day. Bring your phone, as I say. It'll be grand. It'll probably rain, like it always rains when I do it. Clive,
I'd say, man, don't worry.
oh, good man.
Where are you walking to this year? Coventry? Oh, you've got more chance that way than going on the train by the looks of things that I do.
Oh, Jesus, don't say that, Clive. I'm just about to book me. Well, actually, I'm not Cindy's. But book company tickets, so don't say that.
Well, what is it? There's basically four London Northwestern trains in the morning that will get you there for kickoff, and that's it. So what fun that is going to be. What fun that's going to be going out to Euston on the last day of the season,
See,
particularly
I've
for
got you on this bloody podcast, Clive, and we haven't been beaten. There's a good vibe around the place, and you're still at it. You're still at it.
That's public information. That's parish notice board stuff.
Is there really only four trains going to Coventry? Are you serious?
There are, I think there's four, possibly five, although the fifth one to push it because there's no Avanti that day. Yeah, there are four trains that will get you to Coventry for
What about coming
kickoff.
back?
Who cares coming back? I've never cared about coming back. We don't even book return tickets. It's a miracle we ever make it back.
Fair point. You driving, Simon?
Yes.
Excellent. Plan B, activate.
Excellent, excellent
Am I going to
podcast
outsource to like 2,000 people on my Skoda?
plan. There's nothing wrong with your electric Skoda, mate. I love it.
My other RSN was Bright Asay Samuel kickboxing
Oh, yeah.
champion.
Yeah.
Just no messing about. You don't see many punches on a moving target like that.
Apparently the dude had a knife. Can I just say, dude, Jesus Christ, scrub that out. Apparently the fella had a knife.
Yes, so someone had it, had a knife, and Bright still went in there and still won. I didn't really have a lot of time for the way he left the club, but I loved watching him as a player. And I loved seeing that front foot aggression. Absolutely brilliant. They put a mural of him up. And absolutely right as well. It was tremendous.
Good effort. I enjoyed it as well, by the way. Simon, have you got an hour's end?
I'm just going to make one up. Let's talk about governance of football with the joyous last thing the government's going to do before they're voted out of existence. Sorry about the politics, but yeah, the football governance.
We're not allowed
bill,
politics
which,
on the podcast. I get clues to being woke as it is.
Yeah, which potentially could be a good thing, but I suspect with all of these things, will end up to be completely and utterly ineffective.
I have no faith in any political person of any party ever understanding football or doing the right thing. They're just here to annoy us.
Yeah, and I'm totally with you on that. And yeah, I'd love to see it be successful, but I have a very strong suspicion it won't be. And I'd also like to talk about the joy of FFP and the fact that it seems to have brought Nottingham Forest right back into play with a deduction of 4 points. And
they're absolutely furious, aren't they, Forest? They're absolutely livid. Don't spend £200 million on 30 players. You can only do a 25-man squad. Like, half of the players they signed didn't even make their squad for the second half of the season.
My highlights of the old thing has been we've cooperated with it, or we've cooperated and we've got 2 points less for it. And then we've gone, no, I don't like that. We're going to appeal it. Do you know what I'd do straight away? I'd be like, fine, you can have the 2 points. You can have the 2 points back on for that. It's absolutely ridiculous. You can't.
Yeah, frivolous appeal. That happens in rugby league. If you make a frivolous appeal, they make it longer. You signed 30 players and you spent £200 million doing it. You paid Jesse Lingard £6 million on a one-year contract. You deserve everything that's coming your way. The regulator, look, we've got Ofgem. You've still got British Gas making, what, billion-pound profits? You know, while people's bills go up, we've got Ofwat. You've still got people tipping shit into the sea, and you know we've got Ofcom, and you've still got GB News. It'll just be another regulator. That's
what's
there.
This turned into? The QPR politics
podcast.
I'm always accused of being left. I never mentioned politics. So anyone who wants to abuse Simon and Clive, you find them and abuse them. Don't leave me alone.
You can't. I mean, what is being missed in all this football regulator chat is quite a few of the African nations have been threatened by FIFA with expulsion from their international tournaments. In fact, I think a couple have recently been expelled from international tournaments because the government is not allowed to interfere with the running of the sport. So that should tell you everything about exactly how many teeth this regulator is going to have. It's going to be. Seem to be there, but not there to be seen.
I like the fact that, who seen it coming? I mean, the Nottingham Forest owner is as clean as a whistle, from what I understand from his time in Greece. Absolutely no scandal at all. Yeah, when he came to the Football League and the FA to get the club, I'm clean bill of health, not a problem. Nothing dodgy about him at all.
I enjoyed him chasing Paul Tierney down the tunnel after the Liverpool game recently, completely. Apparently forgetting that Paul Tierney was the video referee for their playoff final against Huddersfield, which, without wishing to draw legals to the podcast, was questionable in its outcome and officiating.
I think that might have been one of the reasons why he chased him down. All the things I've done for you, you've done that.
you said that. You said that, not me.
You should be able to tell the time in that watch. It cost me enough. Anyway,
well, I mean,
you'll have the Athletic after you, Paul.
I'm talking about George Tierney. Is that the one? And the so whatever. No, there was, but he's saying these things. But the one that got me this week was Wycombe Wanderers pissing off Reading by, you know, purchasing a training ground at bog standard prices and just doing what no football club should do, which is basically walking their grave. That is just shocking.
Right, to be fair to Wycombe, they haven't done it.
No, they've pulled out. I know that, but
only because they've checked the planning permission, and it specifically says on the planning permission, Reading training ground. That's the only reason that hasn't come through. Good luck with the edit, Paul. Is it, who edits this these days? I mean, good luck to whoever that is.
He don't. He keeps it all in.
Listen, George, I'm going to be technical with you. There's a reason why we don't edit, is I don't fucking know how to do it. But Paul is working with me.
You're going to have to learn quick, mate.
Listen, we haven't said anything dodgy at all that can get us sued. Clive Whittingham of Law for Words website has joined us this week for a lovely chat and has nothing to do with the podcast at all. He's responsible for everything he says. So is George, so is Simon. I'm innocent. I am well innocent. Right. I've done, George, have you done yours? Yes, Clive's done yours. Simon, you've done yours. Oh, I suppose it's mine. Oh, dear. Yes. First of all, I have to apologise to Alan and Cindy, because I've come to the conclusion that, and Simon sometimes, that I am a complete arse to travel to games with. I walk off in the wrong direction. I get the wrong trains. I am just disorganised and rubbish. I'd like to thank them for looking after me this season. God knows a 54-year-old man should know better, but I never do. So thank you guys for looking after me. I do appreciate it. Oh, Hugo, Mr. No Balls, has come in to say hello. Right. And on a serious note, tomorrow we say goodbye to Stan. His funeral's tomorrow. He'll be leaving us. And that's going to be a tough one. I know a lot of QPR fans are going up there, and a lot of us can't because of various reasons. But yeah, that's going to be hard for a lot of people. I mean, we joke and we laugh about things, and we should do. But yeah, that's one light that should never have gone out, that's going out. So rest in peace, Dan, and God be with you wherever you are. Now, we'll go on to predictions now. After that, so I kind of get the feeling I know what you're going to say, so I'm going to leave Clive to last because it's nearly me volume time. So yes, I'll be on that in a minute. That's Clive Whittingham of Loft for Words, which you can find on the website anywhere on Google. Simon,
what am I predicting?
Birmingham, you tit.
Oh, right, okay.
We're not going to put that for then.
Yeah, it's a bit of a way away. Yeah, it's a bit of a way away. So I'm really.
My fault. International football, mate.
1 week.
Heart says 1-0 win.
Yep.
Head says 1-0 win.
All right. Well, what about England and Brazil then?
I don't care, frankly.
It's a fuck.
I could not care less.
Fair enough. Well, I was supposed to be going to Northern Ireland, Scotland next week, and then it was pulled from under me because I didn't cooperate with my housemate, otherwise known as a wife, and forgot to tell her. So I can't go now. So that was fun. Clive?
I think we'll get beat, but I always think that. And even if I did think we were going to win, I wouldn't say it because as soon as I say it, it's not going to happen, is it? So I'm going to say that we're going to get beat. And then it's up to you whether you think I'm saying that not to curse it or because that's actually what I think is going to happen.
It's like a lot of things you say, Clive. It's all in jest, and you don't mean a damn word of it, Clive, from Law for Words. George?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I'm tired of being a pessimist. I'm going for a 2-0 home victory, I think. All you could say, yes, they got Gary Rowett in. Yes, it will be such a dogged performance from them, but I think 2-0 win at home.
I love that. You know what? I don't know what to think anymore. I just want us to win, and that's all I want. But like Clive, I'm scared to say it, so I'm going to say nothing, which is unusual for me in many ways. And pick yourselves off the floor, listeners. I can be quiet. Right, I think that's been an enjoyable podcast. We've seemed to have covered everything. Is there anything that we've missed in the world of QPR that people are going to be screaming on Twitter going, Christ, they slagged off GB News, but they didn't say this? Clive Whittingham of Law for Words. Anything? Simon? Young George?
No.
That's it then. Well, thank you, listeners, for staying with us. This is a podcast of the Law for Words Clive Whitland Appreciation Society via Google, and nothing to do with the podcast at all. People who want to be sued. Listen, thank you, guys. George, as ever, a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Clive, sorry we don't edit. I'm shit. I'm sorry. But thank you.
It's all right.
Anything? Want to say goodbye, Clive?
Come on, you lads.
That'll do. Simon, my little friend from Coventry. We will speak later, no doubt.
Yes, you and about 2,000 others, I suspect.
You'll be the most popular man in your neck of the woods ever, son. Don't you worry that. Thanks for listening. Come on, you Oz, we can do this. This has been Open All Oz. We are.